right, I'll give it a try.
No. Try not. Do. Or do not. There is no try.
And I'm going to say most everyone who grows up on a farm does have an ability to solve problems more than people that don't grow up on a farm. Not to say that people that don't grow up on a farm have missed out on life, but it seems to me that when you grow up in a harder life, and I'm going to say on a farm, that's a harder start. You're just going to have to start doing things sooner.
Hey guys, we'll get into the podcast in just a minute. However, I am looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show, and I am planning a road trip across America and including parts of Canada. I'll tell you more about both of these at the end of this podcast. Today on the Blue Collar Voices show, I am delighted to have as our guest, Mark LeConte. Mark runs his own company, High Quality Home Maintenance in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. A part of what he does is general home repairs, finding and correcting roof leaks, gutter cleaning, gutter screens, siding, roofing, carpentry, drywall, and I'm sure a host of other miscellaneous items.
That's exactly right.
Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John.
I kind of gave a few high points there, but just tell me a little bit about what you do in your business.
Well, basically what you said was exactly right. In addition to that, we do the oddball things occasionally. I will say just out of what I've done this year that have been somewhat odd or strange, is I had to hang a picture in a hallway, which was not really a hallway. It was more of a stairway. It was a stairwell, and she wanted it hung up high, way at the top of the stairwell. And to hang that picture, it took us an hour, but it was quite an ordeal. Some other things that I've done, I've put a lock on a refrigerator, which was a first. I've never had to do one of them tasks before. And the refrigerator was in a bedroom. I won't say whose bedroom, but it was in a bedroom. And I have... And so I don't know if there's a control issue there or not. It's not my business. I just was there to do the task and did the task.
Sure.
So, and then there's putting in older doors that have been, say, a 1900s door, and putting them in another old house, trimming them, sizing them so that they will fit in the opening that we have. And usually it's, either you take off a shaving or you take off 2 inches, you know. So when you start taking off 2 inches, you don't want to start getting into that recessed panel or that, I know you know what I'm talking about. I can't think of the right word, but anyways, basically you got a 6-panel door.
A hollow space.
Or a 4-panel. Yeah, you don't want to start getting into that panel because then you've got no vertical style to put your hinges into or to drive your screws into. And if you take it off the doorknob side, the doorknob, which is either 2 3/8 or 2 3/4 of an inch off the edge of the door, hopefully it's set at 2 3/4 so that you can take it down to 2 3/8. So that way you can trim on both sides of the door. Things like that. Just you have to make things work with what you have.
Sure.
And sometimes it's easy in concept, but when you actually have to put the saw to the wood, you make one mistake, you're done.
Mm-hmm. A new door.
Yeah, you're getting a new door. And with these old doors, they just spent, this customer was spending upwards of $220 a door, you know, for these older antique doors. So you can't just... You have to be careful that you don't mess anything up. You get one try.
The door you're talking about, interior door, antique, I would have thought that they would have been more solid all the way.
Oh, they are. They've got like, I'm going to call it a, I'm going to call it a 2x6, but you know, it's a heavy style or a vertical main support of the door on each side. And then you have your, I don't know. I you know, you start talking about specifics on door parts. Sometimes you get the door part names wrong, and I just know you got your panels, and those panels offer no substance. You can't really trust the panel. That's why you have to.
The panel's almost there just as something to obstruct view.
Exactly right. Yeah, that panel's just to fill a hole that they make in the door. The frame, the edges of the door, is what actually makes the door stout. That's what gives the door the strength.
Right.
The panel just floats in the opening. The doors are something you just don't want to mess up. You don't want to have to fork out money when you're working. You want to make sure the money is going towards you, not away from you.
Yeah, what's that old adage? Measure twice, cut once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's measure five times sometimes.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous. It's
if you're going to pull out like, okay, I'll need this much rope, and you're like, you know, pull three extra armfuls or something, and you get done, you're like, man, I barely had enough. You're like, where does all this stuff go? You know, you think you're going to have all this extra, and it's a good thing. And I ran into that a lot when I used to pull wiring cable, like I'm networking and pulling stuff. And I'm measuring,
right?
Okay, this, okay. Yeah, let me pull off an extra, you know, 15, 20 feet. Now, I mean, who cares? I'll cut off 10 feet. I'm like, whew, that just made it.
I had 4 inches too much.
Exactly. It's like, well, one time I went in there, it was like, I actually was like an inch or so short. And I went up there, and I'm like, okay, where can I find some extra space? And like, you know, how you're routing it, you're looking at it. Okay, well, I could do this. So you manage to pull and just readjust a little bit so that you aren't compromising anything. But that path that you thought you were going to take might be altered slightly. So I understand. I was curious though, what was the challenge? You said you hung a picture in the stairwell. It took about an hour, and it was something that was unique about it. What made it so unique?
Well, it was heavy. This was a heavy piece. It wasn't just your normal picture. This weighed probably about, I'm going to say it was 45 or 55 pounds, pretty good size. So what we ended up doing was we had to go get the bracket that you put on the wall. I'm going to call it angle iron for lack of a better term. So you have this angle iron piece, but it's aluminum, you know, it's kind of lightweight-ish. But anyway, you screw that to the wall, and the top lip of that is bent outwards.
Okay.
And then you put a receiving piece of angle iron, aluminum, whatever. You screw that to the door, and then on the bottom side, it's beveled, so it pulled out at the bottom. So when you drop the picture frame or whatever onto the wall, they basically receive each other, and it just always, it will only get tighter. It can only, you know, pull closer to the wall once you put that on. So you have to get those measurements all right, level. Sometimes you do have to readjust a few things. You get that first screw, not the first screw, it's the second screw that you put in. Because if you don't have that thing in a level condition when you put that second screw in, then you're done. You got to move everything a quarter of an inch or whatever so you don't use the same holes, and you get that corrected. So, but that was kind of the challenge. And then you have to climb the ladder holding this 50-pound object in your hand, not put a hole in the wall, not drop it on the staircase. Right.
Move very carefully, slowly, deliberately.
Exactly. Yep. And then you can't damage the wall. So we had to use the bumpers on the ladder, which every decent contractor has those bumpers that you put on the end of the ladder. And then even then, those get dirty. So you have to put a towel over those so you don't put a dirty spot on the wall. And these are things that you learn over time. Obviously, I've learned that lesson.
Yeah, as you did a touch up job for somebody for free.
Exactly. You know, we're trying to find some cleaner that's going to take my smudge off, and then while I'm taking that smudge off, I don't want to put another smudge on.
Right. That's
Because I'm on a ladder again.
or remove paint.
Correct. Yeah. So that's one thing I really don't like doing. I have been burned on that before with the paint. Somebody wanted me to paint something or to touch something up. It's like, okay, this is when I was just getting started. And I went and got the paint. And the paint, of course, wasn't a perfect match. So then they, you know, I just spent, I don't know, it was probably $45 or $50 on this specially mixed paint. And I had to eat it. So then after that, it's like, okay, you buy your paint. I'll put any paint color you want on. You get the paint, and I'll put it on. And then after that, I just stopped painting altogether, because unless you're going to paint the whole room, forget about it. I don't want nothing to do with it anymore. I don't like painting, so I'm not going to paint. That's just not my gig.
Do you still do it, though, sometimes?
Only for the repeat customer, you know, somebody that, you know, I really, or, you know, somebody that isn't comfortable getting on a ladder. And this does happen where they have wood siding and they have the woodpeckers that are basically eating up their wood siding, putting their nests in the chimney or whatever. And you replace that wood siding and it was stained, and they give me the stain, and I go up and I put the stain on, and they're perfectly happy with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's when I do things like that for, I mean, it's not special customers, but just customers that do actually want.
You'd like to have a long established relationship.
Right. Yeah. And they're usually real, you know, easygoing, because they've had the stain there and they just let me use it, climb up, whatever. But if I got to go get it, I don't want to do it. I just do not want to go and be responsible for that $50 gallon of paint anymore and make sure that it's the right color. That's not my job.
Sure.
I just put it on.
Looking at your LinkedIn profile, it indicates that you've been doing this for about 21 years. That seem about right?
That's about right. Yep. And that's officially, you know, and from what I remember, I started my business right around 1998, but it could have been a little bit ahead of that. And clearly everyone always starts doing the line of work that I'm in. Everyone starts doing this on the side when they first start out to begin with, you know. You just don't start out doing this job full time.
So tell me how you did get started. What was your trajectory into getting started with this whole business?
It's a long story, but I'll make it short.
No promises, promises.
Yeah, right. So I think it started, you know, it starts when you're real young, first of all. And I'm going to say most everyone who grows up on a farm does have an ability to solve problems more than people that don't grow up on a farm. Not to say that people that don't grow up on a farm have missed out on life, but it seems to me that when you grow up in a harder life, and I'm going to say on a farm, that's a harder start. You're just going to have to start doing things sooner. So you start literally feeding the calves when you're 5, you know, 6, whatever. You're driving a tractor by the age of 10. You're baling the hay at 12, you know. Mm-hmm. You're milking the cows by yourself at 12. You're in charge almost literally at the age of 12. At the age of 12, you can do everything your father can do. Just not as good, you know.
Never.
So you start out that way. What's that?
I said never.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you just can't do it as good as dad can. You just can't. So then after that, you know, you turn 18. And for me, I joined the service. I went into the Navy, became a welder, plumber, firefighter person, which is a hull maintenance technician in the U.S. Navy. And what that means is you are the handyman on the ship. And I'm going to say, if we can't, let's see, how does this saying go? We've been doing so much for so long with so little, we're now qualified to do anything with nothing. That basically sums it up. You literally have the stuff you have on the ship. That's what you have to work with. If you don't have it, you got to figure out another way to get this thing to either stop leaking or to whatever, fill the hole. I don't know. So,
but you did have a machine shop on the ship, right?
On our ship, we did not. Our shop, our machine shop was basically our lathe. And we had an operator that ran the lathe, and he was trained in it. I was never trained in the lathe. I never did anything with the metal lathe. If I ever needed anything done on the lathe, I had to have it done by that guy. Everything else, I did.
Okay.
I could do everything else and was expected to know how to do everything else and get it done.
I like that whole reacting to you never know what it's going to be. I worked in IT and resolved problems. And when I was doing a lot of what I was doing, you really had to make a good call and then you dig into it and solve it. You didn't have a lot of time to resolve the issue. And I can imagine that in your line of work, you even had less time because, hey, you guys had to be prepared for battle.
Right. There was one time, you know, and I'm sure this happens a lot more often than anyone knows, but there was one circumstance that led to me being woke up at around 2 o'clock in the morning when I was on the ship. We're, you know, clearly at sea. I get woke up and the machinist mate says, "We need you to fix this part." It's like, okay, what is this part? He says, "It's part of the evaporator." The evaporator is the device that makes fresh water while we're out to sea.
Okay.
If we don't have fresh water, we're toast. You know, we're heading back in now.
How much fresh water did it produce per day?
You know, I'm going to say it probably produced, and I'm guessing here because that wasn't my area. I just had to fix it. So I'm going to say it probably made 5,000 gallons of water a day, but I could be way off. It could have only made 1,000 gallons, but it might have made 10,000. I don't really have any idea how much water we went through or how much fresh water we went through. But I did know that at that point, if we didn't have fresh water in the morning for breakfast, we were basically not going to have much for breakfast, you know, because they used the water to wash everything. Obviously, I mean, I don't know how much water they used. But anyway, so I get called down. I asked them, okay, what's the critical size of this part? Is it the outside or the inside? Because I need to fix this. But this thing is riddled with holes. It was a piece of brass. It was for all intents and purposes, it was a brass cup. And it would be placed upside down, and they would spray water into it from the bottom, and it would disperse the water to create, you know, kind of like an umbrella effect of the water to evaporate or whatever, aka the evaporator. He said the outside was critical dimension. Okay, so then I took a sheet of brass, cut a length of it, formed it into a circle, placed it inside the cup, and soldered it on through the holes on the outside. So basically, I just put an internal skin on that brass cup. Mm-hmm. But because it was full of holes, everything worked fine. They put it in. And it took probably an hour, hour and a half to do this. So now it's, you know, near probably 4:30, maybe 5 o'clock before they get the part in. Because, you know, just like everything else, just because I'm done, it doesn't mean it goes in 2 minutes. So anyway, they put that in and we had fresh water. We had breakfast. Everything's running normal. We're still out to sea and no one knows anything other than my boss. My boss comes up to me and this is at muster at 7 o'clock. He says, "Did you know, what was going on?" I said, "Not really." I said, "I just fixed the part that they wanted fixed." He says, "Well, why didn't you wake me up?" Well, because I didn't know you wanted to be woke up for one, you know, how would I know? He said, "Well, I should have been woke up." I said, "Well, what were you going to do? Were you going to watch me fix it?" It's like, and basically at that moment I realized, oh, I got it. you wanted some of the glory. Oh, got it. Man. I said, you know, unfortunately, this was the one boss in the service that I say one. There was two that were substandard, I guess, in my case. I say substandard. They were my boss, but they were not able to perform the things that I could perform. They just didn't have the skill set. But my first two bosses, you know, could match me or exceed me. Not that I'm any great welder. You don't have to be great. You just need to make the pieces stick together, I guess, at the end. But that's when I started to not like some of the politics that were involved. So
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So then it wasn't long after that. It was, I was only in for 6 years. Then I got out. And once I was out, got a job at Federal Express. I was delivering packages, did that for a year and a half. And then I found a welding job here in Cedar Rapids, did that. And at both of those jobs, you make friends. You start, hey, since you've done that, can you do this? It's like, yeah, I can put in a gas line for your new gas fireplace. So you start doing that for some of your friends. And then the next thing you know, it's like, I might as well get a truck, you know, that I can haul some stuff in, you know. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, you got to get these tools. You got to get those tools. And 4 years later, you've got enough stuff to start a business. So you just start. You just literally put an ad in the paper one day. And that's how I got started.
What was your first ad like?
Oh, I'm sure it was horrible.
Like, what did you advertise that you did?
Oh, I can't even remember. I think it was just, you know, handyman. I do know that I did start out with gutter cleaning because that was an easy in and out job. So that's what I started with. And I will tell you that gutter cleaning is one of the highest margin jobs that I've ever done. You go there, and as long as you can get on the roof and do it, if you can't get on the roof, it does make it a lot more difficult. Mm-hmm. And the reason you can't get on the roof is if it's, unless you have the right equipment. But once it starts getting to be 8-12, 9-12, right in there, that's getting to be too steep to walk, unless you have the right equipment.
Right.
So for the first few years, I didn't have the right equipment, so that's too steep. So then you start doing it on the ladder, and you move the ladder every 5-6 feet, and that takes forever, cleaning gutters. Mm-hmm. So you're just better off getting on the roof and cleaning it out. Now that I do have the right equipment, we can do those steeper roofs. We can knock them out just as fast. We do try and stay away from the metal roofs that are steep. Those, you still, I mean, they do make equipment. You almost need the magnetic shoes, believe it or not. And it's just one more thing. It's like, I've got enough stuff in my truck. I do not need another pair of shoes that I use 5 times a year. That's just not, I'm just not going to do it. But then after that, I got asked by one customer, hey, since you're up there, could you check this, find out what's leaking up there? I got a roof leak. And that is literally how I got started in the roof leaks. And it just amazed me, for me, at how simple some of this stuff was. And the blatant disregard for how water runs from professionals that do this stuff. Mm-hmm. And being the handyman.
Well, purported professionals.
Right. Yeah. Just like that, you know, the ones that claim to know how to do it, and they just can't. It still boggles my mind now how they cannot get some of it right. But again, I can't complain. It served me well. So I'll take their mistakes every day and correct them for the customer. Unfortunately, the customer's going to have to bear that cost twice. They already paid to have it done once. In some cases, they've paid other contractors to come out 2, 3, 4 times to fix something. a roof leak, and the caulking, the tar, you know, yeah, I have to have it tarred every 2 or 3 years. That's, if you have to have it tarred every 2 or 3 years, nobody's fixing anything up there. They haven't fixed anything for the last 10, if that's how they're fixing it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, all you need is a little bit of flashing, a couple of shingles, and literally a little dot of caulk. I mean, it's just that simple. I don't know how to say it enough, but the people that take that 5 gallon bucket of tar up there, you want to get that guy off your roof as fast as possible.
That's an awful lot of tar to be taking up there.
I know. And they do it. And then when they do it, it does stick together. You can't take that shingle out without taking every shingle that's touching that tar out. Every single one. They're all coming out. Some of the chimney guys are almost as bad, I have to say it. But again, it's served me well if they can't put the counter flashing in the brick properly.
Doesn't the flashing, I mean, that actually goes into like where the concrete, the mortar bonds the bricks together. It there's a groove that you create right there and slide it in and you put it right there, right?
Correct. There's a couple of different methods to do it. Some people like to grind out the entire mortar joint and then put a vertical up bend on their copper, aluminum, whatever they're using for the counter flashing, and they'll recess it into that joint, and then they'll re-mortar that joint. I don't go to that extent. I don't want to be a mason. I don't want to be carrying mortar up and down. So what I do is I take my diamond wheel grinder, get a nice straight line, snap a line, do whatever to make sure you have a straight line. Then when you put your cut in the mortar, and I like to be right at the top of the mortar, so I'm going to cover that whole joint because the joint's going to be the weak spot. So when I've got my blade angled up, I'm actually going up into the brick a little bit.
The brick itself. Okay.
Right, the brick itself. So then when I put my counter flashing in, it's going upwards. It's angled up. It's not angled. It's not going straight in horizontally. It's angled upwards. So that way, if for whatever reason the caulk should fail or some water should get up in there for some reason, it has to drain out. And it's literally that simple. Everything has to be shingled, is what they call it. You got to have the shingle effect where the water comes out on top of something and it hits that surface and then it comes out on top of the next surface and then on top of the next surface. You just cannot ever drive that in. It's always got to come out.
With going into the brick that way, even if the mortar becomes weak and has a leak, it doesn't even matter.
Correct. Right. That's why I like to be right at the top edge of that mortar joint when I'm putting my counter flashing in. So that way I've eliminated that mortar joint. Now every mortar joint above that, if that's cracked, you know, that's cracked. I like I said, I'm not a mason.
You can only do what you can do.
Right. That's when the mason does have to get in there. If the brick chimney is literally falling apart, you need a new chimney or else take it off and have a house remodel or a chimney remodel or whatever. And that's always expensive. That's going to be something that they have to figure out what they want done.
So is roofing pretty much what you do now? Not roofing, but roofing, troubleshooting.
Right. I do very few roofs anymore. The last roof, I did one roof this year. I think I did two roofs last year. Everything else, as far as roofing goes for me, is troubleshooting leaks, leak locating, and fixing the existing roof leaks. And I will say that the second roof that goes onto a house is about the most leak-prone roof there is. The first roof is fine. The second roof always, I say always, has a high percentage of failures. And the reason for that is...
Hey, are you talking about a second roof that's on top of the existing or one that's been completely cleaned off and it's a second roof being put on in its lifetime?
Right. Once the first roof has lasted through its life, that gets torn off. It gets resheeted, repapered. Or I say resheeted. If it gets repapered and everything else, the whole shebang, new shingles. The problem that that person's going to encounter, or that company, is where the fascia may run into, like on a dormer, where the fascia runs into the roof or dives into the roof. That is where you're going to have your problem, because when they built that house, they ran the shingles long underneath that fascia board. And when they do that, which is fine, you know, there's no fascia, there's no soffit. You can get up there and you can nail it on. Well, as soon as you put a soffit in there, you've restricted the area that the roofer can get to. Now, when the roofer comes 25 years later, puts that next roof on, he tears the old roof off, puts the next roof on, there's part of that shingle that he just tore out that is now underneath that fascia that he's not going to be able to, he can't replace it. He can't get a new one underneath there. So now he actually has to put step flashing in. Mm-hmm. And when he does not do that, and most of them don't, they just literally caulk the heck out of it. And that works for about anywhere between 3 and 8 years. And that's the sweet spot. I always get, yeah, I got a 5-year-old roof, or I got an 8-year-old roof. It's like, oh, okay, yep, got it. That gives me a good idea where the roof leak's at. It's, you know, up by that dormer, or where the shingle comes around the corner. I say the corner. When you have a dormer that is inset into the roof, so the roof comes around to the front side of that dormer, that again, that corner is where you're going to have a problem.
Okay.
It's just a leak-prone area. Now throw vinyl siding at it. It's covered up. People never take the siding off when they put the shingles on, because that's a whole nother job. That's, you know, that's a whole nother skill set. They're not there to take the siding off. They're there to put the shingles on. When you have a complex area like that, it doesn't matter if you want to do it. It doesn't matter if you like to do it. You have to do it. You just, if you want it to not leak, you have to do it.
So when you come out and you're solving that problem, you're kind of doing reconstructive surgery.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we got to go in there and take the siding off, take the shingles out, take more shingles out than normal, because normally the homeowner's gotten up there, you know, now with, what is it? Flex seal. Everybody's getting that flex seal. Not to run flex seal down.
I actually don't know what that is.
Oh, really? It's a rubber product in a spray can is what it is.
Okay.
And a lot of homeowners buy it. There's infomercials and commercials on TV for that stuff. They've got flex caulk now and flex tape and all kinds of flex seal products. And it's also nice to have brand new material, clean. People get this stuff when they've already got a leak, you know, and they show them on TV. Everything's brand new. Well, yeah, you don't need it on brand new stuff. Yeah.
If you're spraying it on shingles where, like, you know, we have a little bit of the, I'll call it gravel, but it's the little tiny, tiny particles.
The shingle grit.
Yeah. Shingle grit. If you're spraying on shingle grits that's loose, well, it's going to grab hold of those loose grit and it can, like, you could just peel it off.
Exactly. It's still going to leak. And I tell you what, this guy has made a fortune off of selling a product that gets used right probably 3% of the time.
Yeah. Have you ever used Flex Seal yourself with intent?
Absolutely not. I have not. But it is at Menards now, though. Flex Seal is at Menards. He's managed to get it into that store. So that's going to be and that's a Midwest box store.
Right.
I don't know if you have that where you're at or whatever, but it's a Midwest home improvement store.
The first time I went to one when I was working for a company that I was in Texas at the time, and they flew me up there, or I drove, I don't remember which, I've made so many trips, but it was for one of the remote branches. They went to Menards. I was like, man, this is a pretty cool place. Big ass store with just about everything you can imagine.
It is a great store. I will say that I get a lot of my stuff there. Unfortunately, some things you cannot get there. Do not bother getting some things there. Some of those things would be electrical parts, such as, I'm going to call them the pull chain switches. If you have a ceiling fan, everybody knows what a pull chain is. Mm-hmm. And that ceiling fan, and this happened to me again today, I was replacing the pull chain switch of a 3-speed fan in the kitchen. Not a big job, not hard to do, but when you put the brand new part in and you get all the wires connected, and this is the one where you have 4 slots in the pull chain switch itself, and you have to stab the wire into those slots, and you're done. You put the thing in so the tip comes out, and you screw the ferrule in on from the outside, and you have that nice transition, and then you pull on that chain. Well, I started putting that in, started screwing on that ferrule, and the next thing you know, I saw a wire come out. And it's like, well, I'll be darned. What happened? And I look at it, and it's like, it's broke. It's like, huh. And that came from a big box store. And that was like a $5 part. And I hate getting parts like that because they cost you more running around. If they could just make that part. Yeah. If they could just make that part worth a crap, you know, I'd be fine, but they have to make it so cheap that it costs me money because it breaks when I'm putting it in. So then I went to an Ace Hardware.
$20.
Yes. So I had to eat that in this case because, you know, I told them, yeah, it's going to take this long, you know, and it didn't take that long. It took twice that long.
Right. You're getting some windshield time in.
Yeah, exactly. And it's no good. It is just no good. So, but other than that, Menards is a good store. I do like Menards. I do like Menards over Lowe's, and I do like them over the Home Depot. And those are the three big box stores that we have here in Cedar Rapids.
I'm not an expert on Menards, and I've been to Lowe's and Home Depot.
What was that?
It's Hose.
I got to find that store. I'm going to go look for that store tomorrow.
So I'm not an expert on Menards, but I have been to, I almost said it again. I have been to Lowe's and Home Depot many, many, many times over the last couple of decades. But Menards seems to have a wider selection. They're almost like a combination of Home Depot, like a True Value hardware store.
Yes, exactly.
And maybe a bit of a Walmart, all kind of thrown together.
And I do like that about the Menards. In some cases, they actually have a better product than the other box stores. Not all the time. But sometimes, because of their diversity in products, I just find them to be one of the better box stores to go to. And I'm not trying to, you know, ring them up or whatever. That's just what I've noticed. So I prefer.
A disclaimer, my listeners, there was no monetary incentive for this particular blurb.
That's exactly. That's exactly right. I'm not gaining from it.
Unfortunately.
It's just the way it is. Yeah. But I will say Ace Hardware, I think it's the Oak Brook collection of their faucets. They have some of the better faucets, in my opinion. So, and they're inexpensive, but they still perform well. I ended up putting one of them in my own kitchen. I think it's the Oak Brook. There's an Oakdale. I, I cannot quite recall. I'd have to look at the package again when I go to the hardware store. And I think it's the Ace. Did I say Ace brand? I think it is the Ace Hardware Oak Brook faucets. That is a...
What about doing repairs like... Like when later, if you have to replace like gaskets.
I've never had to repair one. The easiest ones to repair are the Deltas. The Deltas always have that washer that goes bad. And I say Delta. Delta and Pfister are about the same. Kohler is a little bit nicer, but they have absolutely 10 million types of things you need for a Kohler faucet. Nothing is standard, it seems like, with Kohler. It is just a nightmare. So when somebody has a Kohler faucet, I'm out. Call a plumber.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I want nothing to do with a Kohler. It is literally every time I take one of those apart, it's the first time. It is something different every time. You cannot believe. And I do have a video on YouTube about a Kohler faucet. No. I'm sorry, it was not a Kohler, it was a Moen. And Moen finally started to pony up. They had that ad that ran that was a Moen, buy it for looks, buy it for life. And I started to say, yeah, Moen, buy it for looks, it lasts for 2 years, you know, because some of their stuff was just junk. And then apparently, and I have no knowledge on this, but if I had to guess, somebody sued him because of that ad. You say buy it for looks, buy it for life, that's supposed to mean something. And they actually started doing something good about it. And I had to fix this Moen faucet. I called them up. I said, this is what I have. I sent them a picture, you know, from my phone, and within a week I had the parts bag for it, and it was no charge. So kudos to Moen. I really am surprised that they did that. Now, the customer still had to pay me for it to put it in, but I didn't even have to pay anything for the parts, which that was amazing. I was so impressed with Moen after that. And I've actually done that two or three times with Moen, and they just always send me the parts.
Well, that's the way to get repeat business.
Yeah.
If you know that they're going to stand behind it like that, you're like, yeah, put in the faucet. They will take care of you.
Yeah. So if you actually want, are you there?
You're gone.
Yep, I'm back, right?
There you are.
Okay. It timed out. Sorry. So, yeah, I forgot to touch it. So basically, with Moen, after they did that, I'm a proponent. I really like how Moen handled that, and now I will promote them.
It's an important perspective.
Yeah.
So you talked about how you kind of got started in your company, and you talked about how you put the ad in the paper and how it kind of grew. And it seemed like it pretty quickly turned into detecting roof leaks along with the gutters.
Yep.
And you do, you know, a lot of different things. But how did, over the number of years that you've been in business, when you first started, how did your customer load vary back then? How much were you still spending time looking for customers versus now, do you even have to look for customers?
Right. Well, at first, my customers, every single customer was gold for me. You know, I treated them as well as I could. Not that I treat them poorly now. Unfortunately, now I almost have too many customers. I can't get to them fast enough. Before I've lost them and they've moved on to somebody else if I don't get there, you know, literally within a week. Mm-hmm. So, but at the beginning, I serviced everyone that called me. And at that point, all I wanted to do was make enough money to pay for the truck, pay for the tools, and pay for the insurance. And then all of a sudden, okay, well, I'm going to keep doing this. Why don't I up my goal a little bit, have them, you know, I want some extra play money, whatever that means to people.
And at that point in time, you still had a regular job.
Right. Still had a regular job. That's exactly right. So
okay.
I wasn't really chasing down the customers. I just wanted to pay for the vehicle, you know, because I bought the vehicle, obviously, just like everybody else, you get the loan. So, and everything was working fine. Then the next thing you know, you just have too much to do. So you got to start to figure out, do I spend any time with the family? Because you're working nights, weekends, plus your regular full-time job, 40 hours a week during the week. And at that point, I was getting called in for overtime quite a bit. And that was at the, you know, at your regular full-time job. And my job was no different than everyone else's. There's mandatory overtime. There's overtime you don't have to take. But when you're called and if you answer the phone, you're coming in. So,
tag, you're it.
Yep. Tag, you're it. So once that got over, I had to get comfortable with the feeling of letting that job go, you know, and making the leap. And when I felt I had enough, and it was 2008 is when that happened. So it was about 10 years after I started. And that's when I reclassified myself as, not reclassified. I'm going to say I classified myself appropriately as your home repair professional. I'm not a handyman. I'm a home repair professional.
When did you actually introduce High Quality into your business?
Oh, that was the name from the beginning. It was High Quality Home Maintenance.
I will edit this out.
Asshole.
You know me so well after such a short time.
It's always been that way. So, but you know, everybody makes mistakes. I've busted a toilet once, you know, and you just have to get through it. I had taken it off and I had to put it in the garage because they're getting a new floor put in by, they're getting Pergo installed. So, and I had to come back in 2 days or whatever and put their toilet in. And when I went to pick it up from the garage, it turned in my hands and I ended up hitting the front of the base on the concrete floor and chipped it. And I was like, and all I had to do was basically take the toilet off and put the toilet on. Now I get to buy a toilet, you know, it's like, oh my gosh,
$200.
Yeah. You know, you got to run to the store, whatever. So it is what it is. You make your mistake and you just fight through it.
Well, after 21 years of doing this, I would say that's not the only time that you've ever done something like that, but correct. It sucks every time.
Yeah, it sucks every time. This was probably literally last month, because it happens that often, where you take that dang measurement, and I'm going to say that measurement was 122 inches. You know, it was actually 122 and three quarters. So I go over there to mark the board or whatever it is, and I measure it, and I got 122 in the brain. So when I'm looking at it, I'm looking at 121 and three quarters instead of 122 and three quarters. And I cut it perfectly 1 inch short, you know, it's like perfect. That fit. That's awesome. You know, got plenty of slop on each side. Yeah,
exactly. A little
flex seal. We're good to go. But I have minimized some of those. So, but when I minimize, then I got my worker, you know, he likes to maximize. He's got to make that same mistake. So they do. They make the same mistakes we do. You can't get around it. And I just saw a cartoon. Boy, it must have been just 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's like the apprentice, when he makes a mistake, and you see the journeyman just screaming at him, you know, in the cartoon. And then when the journeyman makes a mistake, and the journeyman's like, puts his finger up to his, you know, his cheek, and it's like, oh, you know, sorry. because there's nobody there to chew the journeyman's butt out, and the apprentice can't do it.
More than once.
Right. The apprentice can only do it once. Yes.
You've been doing it now for 20 years. It's changed over the years some, but how does it change from season to season?
Oh, sometimes it's drastic. In the wintertime, which is my time off, I literally try to take 2 months off. So as soon as Christmas hits, I don't like to do anything. I want to be off till February. There have been times where my customers don't see it that way. Mm-hmm. They want me to work, you know, every day. And I have to do that sometimes, but I literally try and stop advertising in the wintertime or try and slow it down somehow, but it gets harder and harder and harder to do that. But then once spring hits, it's the typical gutter cleaning again that takes over. And then the roof leaks from the ice dams. Mm-hmm. People like that, you know, we need to take care of that ice dam problem. And it's not really an ice dam issue. The ice dam occurs because of the lack of ventilation. Once you start getting heat built up in the attic, you're going to get that snow melting. And once it hits that cold area outside of the envelope of the house, it's going to freeze again. Once it freezes, starts backing up, and then it gets into everything. And there's literally nothing you can do. You've got to either put up heat cables or take a snow shovel, pull that off. And I don't like doing that anymore either. I used to get up on people's roofs. And
sounds dangerous.
Yeah, it is. It's the one time I had to jump off the roof. I literally had to jump off the roof. It was probably January or February. Had the kids, had the ladder up on the house, shoveling off. All of a sudden, a gust of wind blows the ladder over because I didn't have it tied off because the gutters are full of ice. There's nothing to tie it off to. So from there on, my kids weren't old enough to do anything. They couldn't see me from the truck. So I just shoveled the snow from the roof into a pile on the ground and jumped into the pile of snow.
There you go.
That was my solution.
See, creative problem solving.
There's always a solution. There's always a solution. You just got to find it.
Absolutely.
So that was it. But now, though, I will say, as far as the business goes, when I first started advertising, I would advertise in the Penny Saver. And when I spent $1 in the Penny Saver, I made 10. It was such a good deal. You could not afford to not advertise in the Penny Saver. Well, they've changed that. You can now afford to not advertise in the Penny Saver. You have to be on the internet now. You have to have a website, and that is just taken over. And I know zero about websites. So it's a whole new game running a business today from when I started. And the internet has absolutely everything to do with that.
But you have a website.
I do have a website. I think I had my website, the first one created, I'm going to say it was around 2004. And as far as websites go, everyone that was a handyman or is a handyman, I was like one of the first ones in the area that's a handyman to have a website. And again, I hate the word handyman because it has so many negative connotations that go along with it. And
really?
So much. Yeah, that's what I think. That's why I have to say.
I get nothing negative out of it.
Really?
No negative connotations in my mind, yeah.
Well.
I just think of, when I think of handyman, I think of the guy that can fix just all kinds of things. He's the guy that shows up and he's just like tinkering and all of a sudden, boom, things are working.
Yeah. Well, I think of the Pluggers magazine or the Pluggers cartoon, you know. Somebody who's just barely, you know, scraping by, and he's rubbing his two nickels together, and he got another job putting in a window for somebody.
Okay.
But he's got a rusty truck. Okay. He's almost out of gas. It's leaking oil.
That guy's in bad shape.
Yeah. That's my view of a handyman. And that's how I thought my customers were viewing me, you know. I just had that's where I came up with that reclassification, your home repair professional.
All that being said, I think that's a great idea because it regardless, it's still an escalation in the value equation.
Right. It's perceived value. Perceived value. That's what the customer wants. Whether,
sure.
I mean, hopefully they're getting the value out of you, you know, or out of me for what they want done. But along with that, it's that perceived value that they just think, clearly this is the guy. I am glad I called this guy. This is the guy who is not a fake it till you make it guy. That's not, this guy's done it 5 times. If he's done it 100 times, you know, he knows how to get there. He knows how to get the job done.
As you said, your battery's about to die on your phone.
Yeah, I'm down to 3% now.
So you can make this question, the answer to this question kind of quick, but what is the job market like? What is the demand like for what you do? Say in somebody in your area wanted to start working and providing services similar to you do, is there a huge demand? Could they keep busy?
They could. I believe I got plenty of work right now where I cannot keep up, and the roof leaks that I get called out to do, I've been referred to from larger companies like ABC Supply. They're a contractor building supply warehouse. I think they are nationwide at this point. Have you heard of ABC Supply?
Is the ABC like in like block letters like they would have used on the old building blocks? Is that what the ABC looks like?
Pretty close. And it's red, white, and blue, basically.
I think I have seen that. I'm not very familiar, but somehow I'm remembering that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they actually supply, or they actually refer me out. And there's another large roofing company here in Cedar Rapids. That's Tri-County Roofing. They do full roofs, and I try not to do full roofs. I just don't have the manpower. They have the manpower for that. They don't like to do the roof repairs, and I prefer the roof repairs. So
pretty good synergy.
They refer me out for that, and I refer them to the full roofs. If I get called out to a roof, and it's like, yeah, I can't even fix this one leak because your roof is shot. If I touch a shingle, I'm going to make 2 more leaks if I even do anything. And there's plenty of that around. Roofing is a tough living. It is just tough. You have to want to get dirty. You have to want to get sore, and you have to want to get tired. And then you have to try and get paid sometimes.
I've roofed before. And when I did, it was in the heat of Texas, and I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah. I hear you.
A roof in the middle of the summer is hot anywhere, any of the 48 contiguous states in the middle of the summer on a roof when the sun's beating down on you, but it can get really, really hot down south.
Yeah, I won't argue with that at all. Another aspect of the construction industry that I've been getting into is the skylight replacements. I replace skylights. Well, skylights leak, you know, you got the 20-year-old skylights. And when they put the second roof on, it's not necessarily that the roof got put on. It's just the skylight has outlived its life. You just need to sometimes replace that skylight, especially if it's got the rotten wood on the inside. If you can see rotten wood, that means the skylight is bad itself. Now, if it's literally just only affecting the sheetrock, then that's a flashing issue. But rarely do I see it just being a flashing issue on a 20-year-old skylight. It just needs to be replaced. And in fact, I won't even try and fix one anymore. I tell my customers, I will not fix it. I will only replace your skylight. It's not worth it to me to have to go back and do something because the skylight's defective and bad at this point. I can't justify trying to fix a skylight.
You can't control that part.
Right. You know, and you have to tell them that up front. It's like, well, this is what I can do, but there's no guarantee. It's 20 years old. I can put a brand new one on and it won't leak, but I can't do that with this 20-year-old one.
Well, Mark, I know that your battery's about to die, so let's do this. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. And I am delighted that you came on and that we had this conversation. And perhaps we'll talk again at some point. Just thank you. I think it's cool. I'm really enjoying talking to various different blue-collar professionals.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you came on today to chat.
Well, I'm glad you had me on. I'm glad you invited me on. And I don't even know how we connected on LinkedIn, but I'm glad the connection exists. John, it's been a pleasure.
Way cool. I will talk to you later.
Yep. Have a good night.
On our next episode, we'll have Rich Bradbury of Double Orlock. He runs ranching operations over on the West Coast. Here's a short little snippet.
I have a different perspective than a lot of ranchers. So I never questioned when I started out to take on an operation of my own and be responsible for it, that that operation would do anything more than be regenerative type of project and sustainable. The thing about sustainability, when you talk about sustainable, is it's just good enough. When you talk about regenerative, it's something that you can build on and will provide more. It's something that you could add on to. So that's why I think the shift from sustainable has moved to the word regenerative, because we're really looking at increasing our outputs, making better habitat for wildlife, making better soil systems. So we think, and there's a lot of people that throw this words around lightly, but we think that by practicing regenerative agriculture, grazing, the way that we approach the management of our soils, we're actually building something that will have a greater market value and therefore take better care of us in a monetary fashion.
Hey guys, before you go, two things. The first is, I'm looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show. Basically, I'm looking for those that excel in the blue collar arena and have actually got their hands dirty, truly understanding what it is like to do the work. I realize this is an older podcast, but I'm updating this podcast in November 2019 for the announcement of an upcoming road trip. Phase one is building a list of locations to visit. Some locations will be just a meet and greet. Others will be on-site audio and or video. Please check out the website for more information. I'd love to hear from you. Email me at johnc@bluecollarvoices.com. You can also hit me up on LinkedIn. Thanks all. Looking forward to hearing from you. Blue Collar Voices is produced by John Chapman, and all audio, video, graphics are created and edited by John Chapman. Blue Collar Voices is a DR7 Media production.
I'll be back.